This episode of Locked On MLB is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. They're good for you. They're tasty, and I can't get enough of the mint brownie. Use promo code Locked On for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. Let's get on with the show.
You are Locked On MLB, your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast where we talk about all of Major League Baseball, and I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully on today's episode, which is being dropped on the 29th day of May, 2020. We're going to be talking about the multi-part documentary of a baseball superstar that I would love to see. In fact, part of me thinks, should I pitch it? I mean, I know people who make sports documentaries. I've been in a few myself. Well, we'll get to that in a second. This show is available on the free and easy-to-use Himalaya podcasting app and on all the platforms where you get podcasts. You can listen to us directly on the website, which is LockedOnMLB.com. Follow us on Twitter at LockedOnMLB_net. We're on Instagram with LockedOnMLB. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball. Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. And when you're staying at home in this trying time, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB or check out some of the other great shows in the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Fantasy Baseball with Scott Cullen. I'm not going to talk at all about labor stuff. I've made my thoughts clear. I think starting a season in the middle of a pandemic where some of the most basic, some of the most basic questions like, what if a player is infected? Do you quarantine the team? What does that do to the schedule? What does this, that, and the other thing have to do without even going to any of the financial issues? I've made it clear. I want to see baseball, but not at that price. And I also believe that people who say, well, baseball will lose fans forever if they lose the season. Well, I got news for you. If you think scrapping the season is bad, try starting a season and then shutting it down again, which will happen if they open in the middle of a pandemic. All right. Someone's going to say that's political or something stupid. To me, that's common sense. That's just being intelligent. But I'm getting off that because I've made my point clear and there's nothing to report. So a bunch of people have asked me about the Michael Jordan documentary, which I actually haven't gotten around to seeing. I'm behind on some shows, and I will get to watch that. But people I know who are not even sports fans have gone bananas for this, and I'm dying to see it. I am going to go watch it sometime in the next couple of weeks or so. And I've been asked by more than one person what would be the equivalent, what would be the baseball documentary that you would want to see along those lines. And I've given this some thought because Michael Jordan is a unique character. There's no Michael Jordan of baseball of the last bunch of years. Even if you point to people who had unbelievable stats, were tremendously dominant, there was no one figure who was so omnipresent, not just in the world of sport, but just in pop culture, in the fact that he became this larger than life figure, larger than the sport, hell, larger than the city. Like, when I think of Michael Jordan, I don't think of him as a Chicago star. I think of him as a planet all to himself. And I don't think we've had a baseball player like that since Babe Ruth. Not talking stats, not talking impact on the game. I'm talking where the impact overflowed. You can make the argument for Jackie Robinson as a social impact, but in terms of the play on the field, we haven't had that since Babe Ruth. Someone who was so monumental that they changed the nature of the game and that remains the standard not only of excellence in that sport, just became known throughout the world no matter what. We've seen that in some players, you know, Muhammad Ali, Pele, you could argue Tiger Woods. I would argue to a degree. I mean, there's no one I don't think there's ever been a football player who's reached that light. And so, you know, even someone like Wayne Gretzky, who dominated hockey, who redefined hockey, he may have that status in Canada, but he never became this figure like Jordan. I think there have only been a handful of people in the history of sports who've ever done it, and there's not always one. So the idea of saying, oh, you're going to pick someone who was the Michael Jordan of baseball, that's not going to happen. I was thinking about there are certain teams that I think would make interesting documentaries. Obviously, the 04 Red Sox have been done to death. The post-September 11th World Series would be done to death. Although I kind of would like to see a documentary on the Diamondbacks, because it's funny. Everyone talks about the importance of the Yankees winning and how that was tied into September 11th, but the Diamondbacks themselves were a very interesting team, filled with a lot of veterans, including one Hall of Famer and a couple of the potential Hall of Famers getting their lone rings. But, you know, that's for me. I also would think a documentary on the 97 Marlins would be interesting because it was a championship window that was in real time. Everyone knew they were going to blow the team up after the World Series, and it became interesting. It was like a phantom title. But I was starting to think about this. Someone brought up the Maguire-Sosa home run chase, and I do think that would make a fascinating documentary, especially with some distance and with a certain amount of, kind of a little bit of hindsight. I have mixed feelings about that because we know that Maguire and Sosa were juicing themselves up the yin-yang, and the influence of that led to Bonds juicing himself up the yin-yang in the upcoming seasons. It was phony, but it was fun. Kind of like Santa Claus is not real. Hey, spoiler alert for some of my listeners, but it was still fun. There was no denying it was a fun year. It was no denying it brought a lot of people into the game. And whether or not it was real or not doesn't mean our enjoyment was fake. But I gave it a lot of thought, and I realize there is a figure in baseball history, one whose career stretched from one era to another, where he was teammates with many Hall of Famers, multiple World Series titles, a lot of glory in October, broke records in ways that I don't think they forget whether they'll be broken. They'll probably never be challenged. Changed the way his position is played. And in some ways, while I think he's one of the five greatest offensive players in baseball history, has been strangely underrated in the assessment of his career. And I believe people are reassessing how great he was and realize, did we miss one of the great players of all time? Someone who we knew was a Hall of Famer, but maybe was even better than we realized. Someone who was always there with an unbelievably weird quote. Someone whose personality became part of the thumbprint of the game. And who could change the game with a walk and a home run. Someone who was the best ever at what he did. And would never get the credit for avoiding the scandals, the many scandals that befell his teammates and baseball, and became one of the greatest players of all time. And someone who, with a lot of reflection in his life, realizes his legacy while he was playing was probably not as great as it should have been. I would see a multi-part documentary about Ricky Henderson. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about Ricky Henderson, but I'm telling you something. First of all, I'm going to talk about the Ricky Henderson of protein bars, which is Built Bar. I got my new Built Bars in. Great stuff. Oh, my God. You got banana nut bread. You got your toffee over here. What's my favorite? You know my favorite. Listen to this. You know my favorite is chocolate raspberry. It's also mint brownie. 5 grams of protein. 110 calories. 4 grams of sugar. 5 gram net carb. But most of all, they taste great. They taste terrific. They're chewy. They're covered in chocolate, which is fine by me. And they taste like a treat. But they're good for you, low calorie, low sugar. It's great if you're trying to lose or maintain weight. You can indulge in a little bit of a delicious treat. You want your coconut pecan pie, brand new flavor, blueberry lemon, brand new flavor. And guess what? This week's deal is wrapping up. You have until the 31st day of May to get $5 off of every box of bars, no matter what. And use promo code LOCKEDON to get an additional $10 off your first order. Now, if you're not good at math, that's $15 off your order, ending on the 31st day of May, where they have a $5 off every box. Use code LOCKEDON to get an additional $10 off for great Built Bars and great, great flavors that are good for you, and you'll be able to burn them right off because they're low calorie. Check out your Built Bars. Go to BuiltBar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON. And it's going to be the weekend, and I wish I could be watching a game this weekend, but I won't be. But I will be ordering in some good food. There's a great barbecue place in the town that I live in, and we've ordered in burgers, we've ordered in ribs, and your pal Sully loves his fish and chips. And if you ever see me, if we ever get together and say, hey, where do we want to hang out? Order me fish and chips. You'll get on my good side. I digress. Let's talk about how am I going to get this. Because, you know, this times we're living in right now. We can't just go to the restaurants like we used to. I use Postmates. And I can get food delivered without leaving the house or even opening the door. And given all the pandemic stuff going on in the world, they've created non-contact deliveries. So when I order and get my fish and chips, everything gets left right outside the door. And not just my fish and chips. It sounds like this is a fish and chip spot. No, it's not. It's for Postmates. They make my life easier by picking up anything I need from 7-Eleven or Walgreens and dropping it off outside my door. Download Postmates on iOS or Android. Find your favorites and get anything you want delivered within the hour. And for a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use the code LOCKEDON. That's code LOCKEDON for $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. Stop and think about Rickey Henderson for a second. I mean, if we're just going by the numbers of what Rickey Henderson did is, they're just astonishing. If the name of the game is to score runs, well, nobody scored more runs in baseball history or Major League history than Rickey Henderson. When he finished his career, he was in that elite group of 3,000 hits, which at the time was about 20 players. And it's now up to 20, he's now 26 all time. There have been a few 3,000 hit people since he retired. But he was a 3,000 hit man and had, at the time of his retirement, the most walks of all time. And that he's since been passed by Barry Bonds, but he has the most unintentional walks of all time. He still holds that record. And so, if the name of the game is to get on base and score runs, well, think about times on base. Just think about that for a second. The number of times you get on base, whether it's by a hit or walk or a hit by pitch. Well, only three players in baseball history got on base more than Rickey Henderson. Pete Rose, Barry Bonds, Ty Cobb. At the time of Rickey Henderson's retirement, it was only Rose and Cobb who were ahead of him. This is a man who did everything he can to get on base and score. Now, he was a good home run hitter, but he also, once he got on base, he stole bases. And he stole bases at a clip that nobody, I think, can ever comprehend. Now, he was doing it in the 80s when there was kind of a free-swinging, free-wheeling stolen base mentality, which was just go, and tons of players were caught stealing. And as someone who grew up on baseball in the 1980s, I have to say, while I understand that it makes good sense to, you know, to anchor yourself down and not steal the base unless you absolutely have to, and that's the idea is to not get thrown out, I do like the excitement of the runner stealing a base and that sense of, oh, he's going. And nobody did it like Ricky. Now, keep this in mind. Ricky Henderson broke Lou Brock's record. He stole 938 bases. That was Lou Brock stole 938 bases. He broke Lou Brock's record in 1991. And he kept playing until 2003. Ricky Henderson stole 468 more bases than Lou Brock. Now, you take someone like Carl Crawford, who had a nice long career, stole a bunch of bases. Carl Crawford stole 480 bases. Lou Brock plus Carl Crawford equaled Ricky Henderson's stolen base title, stolen base record. And he put together the way that he played, that he was a gold glove outfielder. He hit with power. He could damage you with a leadoff home run. Whenever he walked, it was dangerous because you knew that, okay, he's on base, he could steal. So a walk was as good as a double. But it also messed up the pitcher because they were concentrating so much on Ricky Henderson that when you think about some of the players that he was playing alongside with, whether it was sluggers on those early A's teams like, you know, Tony Armas or Duane Murphy, or whether he was playing alongside Don Mattingly or Dave Winfield, or when he was playing with the Bash Brother A's, or playing with Joe Carter and Paul Molitor, all these players that he played with were getting big fat pitches because they were throwing fastballs with Ricky on. He disrupted the way the game was played and played for a long time, played until nobody wanted him anymore. He just kept going and going. But the thing I think is really intriguing about Ricky is that when he was playing, he was considered to be somewhat of, I don't want to use the word flake, but he was a, like, there was no shortage of Ricky stories. He was almost legendary, kind of like the stories of the quotes attributed to Yogi Berra. Well, there are so many quotes attributed to Ricky Henderson. You know, this is Ricky calling on behalf of Ricky to say that Ricky's ready to play, or Ricky doesn't like it when Ricky's limo's late, or all these different things. The story of him not knowing that John Olerud was his teammate and saying, hey, I used to play with a guy who had a helmet on first base, not knowing he was referring to Olerud, who he was a teammate with in both Toronto and in New York before he was his teammate in Seattle. That story turned out to be apocryphal, but it was there and people believe it. The story that he didn't cash his first $1 million check but had it framed to the point where the accountants at the Oakland A's were wondering if they couldn't balance the books and they had to send a check for Ricky to frame. Said, no, you have to cash it, Ricky. You have to cash it. That turned out to be a true story. All these stories make him kind of this fun, colorful character. And because he played with a sense of style and flash and he would do his kind of the snap catch in left field and he would steal bases and slide head first, there was a certain excitement to him. And he also rubbed people the wrong way. Remember, when he broke Lou Brock's record, he held up the base and he said, I am the greatest of all time. Well, he was being honest. But people don't like to hear that. They think that's brash. You should keep your head down, act like you've been there before. Same day he broke the record for Lou Brock, that same day Nolan Ryan through a no-hitter, and so many people were talking about how Ryan does it with class and not Ricky Henderson, which, listening back on it with our ears of 2020, there's a little bit of ugliness to that, I think. There's an implied, don't get too high on yourself, keep your mouth shut and keep your head down. There's something a little ugly about that from my point of view. There was also another element to Ricky. Remember, he started in the late 70s when Charlie Finley was still owning the A's. He wrapped up his career in 2003 when Bonds was already narrowing down on Aaron's record and we're in the middle of the steroid era and, you know, that the baseball had gone through so many things, two strikes, a lockout, and all the look of baseball in the 70s was almost completely different from 2003. They just, the way it was covered, the way it was shown, the way you consumed it. And he stretched all that time. And he was teammates with several Hall of Famers, including, as I mentioned before, Dave Winfield, including Joe Morgan, Phil Niekro, Rich Gossage, Dennis Eckersley, Harold Baines, Paul Molitor, Roberto Alomar, Jack Morris, Tony Gwynn, Trevor Hoffman, Eddie Murray, I bet you forgot that, they both played for the Angels, Mike Piazza, Edgar Martinez, Pedro Martinez, all were his teammates. He got to be managed by people like Billy Martin and Tony La Russa and Bruce Bochy and Lou Piniella twice and Cito Gaston. He got to be there during some of the crazy, tumultuous years of the Bronx Zoo under George Steinbrenner. He got to be there when the A's redefined baseball in the late 80s and played with Billy Beane as his general manager in Oakland. He was there for Billy Ball in Oakland, where they basically, Billy Martin took the team almost to the World Series and then made sure he was brought over to New York, where he brought his style and flash to the Bronx. And amidst that, you never heard Ricky embroiled in cocaine scandals when so many other players were in cocaine, doing cocaine in the 80s. You never heard Ricky wrapped up in PED scandals when he was in Oakland, teammates with Canseco and Maguire. He got a bad rap, I think, in terms of his attitude and this and that and the other thing. When he avoided scandal, played super hard. Oh, he was playing cards in that game with the Mets. All right. So he may have made a bad decision here or there, but he stayed healthy enough to play deep into his 40s. And he put up unbelievable numbers. And he played with a style that was impossible to not watch. You had to keep your eyes on Ricky Henderson. And I'll tell you another thing. Ricky never got the credit for how smart he was. He never got the credit for being an intelligent player. Yes, he was a fast runner, sure. But he didn't steal all those bases because he was a track star. Hell, the A's in the 70s hired a track star, Herb Washington, to steal bases, and he would often get picked off. He had to read the pitchers, understand the situation, and he led the league in stolen bases deep in his 30s in 1998. He was a smart player. He knew what to do. He understood that he had to keep his body conditioned, and it wasn't about lifting weights, but it was about staying healthy and flexible. I remember reading an article of a A's beat writer who was following him around during spring training one year later in his career during one of his seven or eight stints with the A's, and they were doing their spring training in Arizona, and he would see Ricky would go to a farmer's market where he would eat fresh fruit and get only foods that he knew were coming directly from the farm because he needed to keep care of his body. He wasn't pumping himself up with horse serums like his teammates were. And he got on base and scored runs. And the people around him knew how great he was. Tony La Russa kept talking about how he was the best player at rising to the occasion that he ever saw. Now, there seems to be a certain amount of reflection in Ricky, but he never got the credit for his intelligence. And sometimes his one of the stuff that he was talking about early in his career, we would look at now and see that his wisdom at the time was poo-pooed as Ricky being Ricky. An example of that was at one point when he was playing for the Yankees, a reporter asked him about how his batting average wasn't as high as it was when he was playing in Oakland. And Ricky said, I don't care about my batting average. I care about my on-base percentage. It doesn't matter to me whether I get on base by a hit or a walk if it means my batting average is lower as long as I'm getting on base. And that was laughed at, like, oh, Ricky being Ricky, not paying attention to his batting average. Now we look at it, yeah, he was doing Moneyball before it was Moneyball. Now, over the years, Ricky has been more humble in some situations. He says he's felt badly about the reaction to his speech that he gave after breaking Lou Brock's record, even though Lou Brock himself apparently had no problem with it. And his Hall of Fame speech was quite wonderful and humble. But he remains someone who, hell, he looks like he could still play. And I love the fact that his career didn't end with a flourish in a way. Tony Gwynn wanted him to retire the same day on the final day of the season in 2001. They were teammates with San Diego. And Ricky wound up having a couple of stints with San Diego, and the fans of the Padre fans seemed to embrace him, and he seemed to like playing for the Padres and Bruce Bochy. He actually played in the postseason in 1996 with San Diego. Tony Gwynn finished his career at the end of 2001, and Ricky Henderson got his 3,000th hit and got the run that was broke the record for most runs all time. And Gwynn tried to convince Ricky to retire alongside with him. But Ricky said no, he wanted to keep playing. He played 2002 with the Red Sox. He was a part-time player in 2003 with Los Angeles. And then he wound up playing for independent leagues and kept trying to get back to the majors. The A's tried to sign him to a one-game contract so he could retire a member of the A's around, 2006, 2007, and he refused to do it because, A, he said, I don't want to take someone else's spot, but B, he said, I'm not here for a ceremony. I want to get back to playing. Wound up playing for the independent Newark Bears, an unaffiliated minor league team, had one of the four greatest offensive powers in baseball history as a member of its team. This is a player whose greatness we acknowledged but underrated, whose personality was larger than the game, who changed the way the game was played, changed what we expect from a leadoff hitter. Every leadoff hitter from this day forward is compared to Ricky Henderson. He created a stolen base record which is insurmountable. We don't play the game in a way where stealing 1,000, let alone more than 1,400 bases, is even possible. And he did it with a style that we've never seen before since. Did we miss and not appreciate how great he was? Did we miss and not appreciate how smart he was? Did we miss and not appreciate that we were seeing a player whose talents were unique, even amongst superstars? And someone who wanted to play the game until nobody else wanted to sign him. There is something to be said about a Jeter retiring on his own terms with a farewell tour. But there's also something to be said about playing until you know there's nothing left. Steve Carlton was like that. Steve Carlton bounced around towards the end of his career. And when the Phillies were done with him, bouncing between the Giants and the White Sox and the Indians and the Twins, until finally he was done. He knew there was nothing left in the tank. And that was the case for Ricky Henderson. His teammates, his many, many teammates, his many, many managers, the beat reporters who followed him, and Ricky himself. That would be fascinating on every way, to sit down and say, tell us everything, all your memories, from Charlie Finley to Billy Ball to the craziness of the Bronx, to the championships in Oakland, including being there for the World Series when the earthquake hit, being on base when Joe Carter hit his home run, playing for teams in the postseason, not just in Oakland, but with the Mets, with the Mariners, where he was teammates with Alex Rodriguez and Edgar Martinez, with the playing alongside Piazza, playing alongside Tony Gwynn, all those wonderful teams, all those wonderful players from 1979 to 2003, over four different decades. One of the greatest players of all time, born in Chicago, raised in Oakland, where he got to be a hero for his hometown team. A player whose personality was so unexpected, unique, and singular that all you have to say is, Ricky being Ricky. Was he the Michael Jordan of baseball? No, the Michael Jordan of baseball was Babe Ruth. Michael Jordan was the Babe Ruth of basketball. But Ricky Henderson, he's unique. Was there a Ricky Henderson of basketball, of football, of hockey, of track, of soccer, of golf, of curling, of lacrosse, of cornhole, of Monopoly, of Boggle, of chutes and ladders, of horse, of water balloons? I don't know the answer. Probably of water balloons. But that's a documentary that I would want to see. And maybe I'll pitch it to some of my documentarian friends and finally win that Emmy that was denied me. I was nominated for an Emmy once. I didn't win. I gotta get that Emmy back. This is just Sully being Sully. And you can follow us on the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app and all those different places you can watch and listen to our podcasts, and you can tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Fantasy Baseball. Ignoring the depressing news of baseball today and focusing on Ricky like we all should have in the past. This has been Locked On MLB for the 29th day of May, 2020. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.